The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Perhaps her sins were brazen in the beginning, but her sanctity was brazen at the end. To go in and burst into a dinner full of Pharisees who were just trying to stone you a little bit ago and throw yourself at the feet of the man who forgave you and weep and cover his feet and make this big public spectacle, those are not the actions of a small soul. Those are the actions of a very great soul capable of greatness. Somebody who always was, we could say, had a natural tendency towards boldness and towards passion. And of all the women, she was one of the first ones there and the last one to leave. Everybody else left, but not Mary Magdalene. She just would not leave. She couldn't leave without seeing our Lord.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Talking about St. Mary Magdalene, the apostle of the apostles, the very first apostle. Good afternoon, John Harper in for Drew. And we're going to talk about that. Think about today. Just do a quick examine. I know we're in the middle of the afternoon, or just look back at the weekend. When were you the apostle of today? And that's what you and I are called to be, the apostles of today, to step out of our comfort zone and share our faith. And I know that's easier said than done. Sometimes we'll give you some tips on how to do that coming up in the next 10 minutes. And then later in the hour, we'll show you how to counter some of the spin that you have made, that you may have heard already in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling to overturn Roe versus Wade. We'll give you the good Catholic language to use, as you would expect from Relevant Radio on the Relevant Radio app. But let's get you caught up to date on what's going on. And there's big news coming from Canada as we go on the air. Actually, history is being made in Canada because Pope Francis is in the province of Alberta for what the Vatican calls a tour of penance. He's only the second pope to visit Canada. The Holy Father is there to give an historic apology for residential school abuses that first came to light in 1990. The Holy Father expressed sorrow, indignation, and shame for what has happened. Let me give you some background on this. 200,000 Indigenous children were forced to attend Indian Day in residential sleepaway schools in Canada. This was to assimilate into the Western culture. This is from the late 1800s all the way through 1975. And it was at these schools that children suffered physical and sexual abuse. These schools were run by the Catholic Church. They suffered this physical and sexual abuse at the hands of priests and nuns. Here's how the people of Canada are watching this very important story get covered by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, starting with a request from Justice Murray Sinclair, who is the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a commission that first asked for a papal apology in 2015.
We call upon the Pope to issue an apology to survivors, their families, and communities for the Roman Catholic Church's role in the spiritual, cultural, emotional, physical, and sexual abuse of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children in Catholic-run residential schools. We call for that apology to be similar to the 2010 apology issued to Irish victims of abuse and to occur within 1 year of the issuing of this report and to be delivered by the Pope in Canada.
The Ermineskin Residential School was one of the biggest in Canada, located in Muskwitches here in Alberta, a province that had more residential schools than any other. It operated for 80 years, from 1895 to 1975. And for most of that time, it was Catholic-run. The building is no longer standing, but the hurt so many experienced there is still present. Many survivors have asked for one thing.
The three words they wanted to hear was, "I am sorry."
Powerful words, but an apology will also take an emotional toll. So the community has made sure help is standing by.
We have to heal. Our people have to heal. And this is part of the healing process.
The hope for some, what's about to happen will be a meaningful step in that direction.
The coverage of the papal visit to Canada from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Phil Fontaine was the very first to come forward with his story of abuse in 1990. He's the former chief of the Assembly of First Nations.
Well, the apology is one thing. It's not the end of the story, as I've said on numerous occasions. It's the beginning. It's the start. And it's going to be a journey that will and must include the Catholic Church, the Canadian government, and First Nations people working out a new relationship a more respectful relationship that addresses our issues in a very direct and clear way so that we can begin the process of healing and reconciliation. But we also recognize not only do they apologize to us, or they must apologize to us, we should be prepared to forgive as well, because there will be no healing and reconciliation without forgiveness from us. Otherwise, this matter will go on endlessly.
And you're hearing this first here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. This is just 2 hours ago in Alberta, the apology from the Holy Father.
Although Christian charity was not absent, and there were many outstanding instances of devotion and care for children, the overall effects of the policies linked to the residential schools were catastrophic. In the face of this deplorable evil, the Church kneels before God and implores His forgiveness for the sins of her children. I myself wish to reaffirm this with shame and unambiguously. I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the indigenous peoples.
Although Christian charity was not absent, and there were many outstanding instances of devotion and care for children, the overall effects of the policies linked to the residential schools were catastrophic. What our Christian faith tells us is that this was a disastrous error, incompatible with the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the face of this deplorable evil, the Church kneels before God and implores His forgiveness for the sins of her children. I myself wish to reaffirm this with shame and unambiguously. I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the indigenous peoples.
The apology from the Holy Father, that's just a couple of hours ago that you're hearing first here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. The Pope is going to be in Canada for the rest of the week. Alberta, his home base, and tomorrow he'll celebrate an open-air mass at Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton. Some 65,000 people are expected to attend. And then he goes to meet the Prime Minister of Canada, the Premier, in Quebec City. He's crisscrossing the country and will be there through the rest of the week. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date on that here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Let's also get you caught up to date on a couple of other stories. If you're buying gas, you've noticed that the price of the pump is down a bit.
The nationwide average is $4.35. They're down about 55 cents over the last month. That still is a lot higher than they were a year ago, but we'll take the good news where we can find it.
Yeah, we'll take the good news where we can find it, but it's still over $4 a gallon. It's one of those good news, bad news things, right? And we're also keeping you healthy. The monkeypox virus is now in all 50 states across the United States. The World Health Organization calling the monkeypox, this is their quote, a public health emergency of international concern.
Most cases here in the U.S. have been mild, needing limited treatment, but requiring isolation for about 3 weeks because it's so contagious. The outbreak now has U.S. health officials also considering issuing a public health emergency.
That's Eva Pilgrim from ABC News, and it looks like the center for monkeypox in the United States is New York City. Here's Mayor Eric Adams.
Almost 90% of the cases in this state is in New York City. And so this is, once again, we're the epicenter again.
And as we focus on health to Washington, President Biden's personal physician, that's Dr. Kevin O'Connor, he says the president's COVID symptoms are, and we're quoting here, almost completely resolved. He still has some residual nasal congestion, according to Dr. McCarthy, and some minimal hoarseness. Plus, we continue to pray that the firefighters in Central and Northern California can get ahead of what is called the Oak Fire. It has now burned a number of homes in some 15,000 acres in Mariposa County. Newlyweds Steve and Andrea Ward's home was heavily damaged by that Oak Fire, but they were able to go back and see what was left.
Just to see that space, just I honestly thought it was going to be burned to the ground. I was surprised there's stuff still standing.
If I got to prioritize keeping her safe versus keeping the house safe, I'm taking her and we're getting out of there. What was more important that was built in that was better bonds, better, you know, a stronger love.
Do you hear that? Better bonds and a stronger love coming out of adversity. The physical trials of that wildfire made the bonds of love stronger between Steve and Andrea Ward. What a tremendous witness, not only to their love, but also the sanctity of marriage. And you and I are charged with sharing that good news. Of course, the gospel message and everything that we do, our baptism compels us to do that. That makes you and me the apostles of today. Yeah, maybe we don't smell like smelly fishermen, but we're the apostles of today. And sometimes that's easier said than done, of course, in the culture, family, friends who may not understand how or why you and I live our Catholic faith as publicly as we should, or sometimes we do, and they don't get that. Last Friday, we celebrated the feast day of St. Mary Magdalene, the very first at the tomb of Christ. On Easter Sunday morning, she saw the stone removed from the tomb, so she ran to St. Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved. She shared the news. She was the first apostle, often called the apostle of the apostles. Let's have a conversation now about how you and I can be the apostles of today, especially with the issues of life, gender identity. Just look at what's happening in our culture here in the United States, how we can be not only good citizens of this country, but citizens of heaven at the same time. Let's unpack that with Gary Zimek, who is a Catholic evangelist, author and motivational speaker, a blogger. You read him in all of the major Catholic publications. We recommend his latest book, Let Go of Anger and Stress. It's from Ave Maria Press. And Gary's website is followingthetruth.com. Followingthetruth.com, another plug for Gary's missions, which he does all during the year, but especially during Lent and Lent 2023. Is it 2023 next year already? Well, Lent 2023 is already filling up for Gary. Gary, it's good to have you. Welcome back.
Hey, John, thanks so much for having me. And you know what? It's funny you mentioned the parish missions. I booked another one today, and I think I have one, maybe two openings left. So churches are starting to get excited again, you know, after the pandemic. People are booking much later than they used to, but
yeah,
absolutely. I would be happy to come to any parish. Followingthetruth.com, as you said, is the place to go.
So check that out, and you can learn how to be the apostle of today. And, you know, that's easier said than done, as I was mentioning, because we understand what we are compelled to do, and we're sent out at the end of every Mass to be those apostles of today. Yet when push comes to shove, and I've been in those situations in the last week, you kind of hesitate, you pull back, you just say, okay, how can I spin this so I really don't put myself way out on a limb when I should put myself out on a limb? What do you do when you're faced in those situations? It could be family, friends, whatever it was. In this particular case, it was at the supermarket, and it was right after Mass, no less. I'm willing to confess here on the radio, when I should have shared my faith and I didn't.
John, I got to tell you, you know what I love about your brother? You're so honest and transparent. I have the same difficulties, and you know those situations. You run into them, you might not anticipate them, but you start to feel like, uh-oh, here it comes.
Right.
I got to tell you
the story, because it's so silly, it's embarrassing.
I'd love to
After this happened, I was walking to the car and praying for that person, and also thinking at the same time, wow, how you can go down that slippery slope. It was incredible. I'm just coming from Mass. It's last Wednesday morning, and I figure, okay, this is good. It's only 7:30. No one's going to be at the bottle return thing, right? So I go in there, and there is a wonderful grandmotherly woman there with 9,000 bags. She must have had every plastic and glass bottle in a 20-mile radius, and she's there. So she finishes one big plastic bag, and I ask her, I said, would you mind if I just snuck in here because the other machine was broken? I said, I just have like about a dozen bottles. And she was very nasty to me. And so I was kind of not nasty back, but it was kind of, wait, I don't get it. How can you be so angry? You know, I was like, instead of saying, you know, I'm going to pray for you, or instead of just saying, you know what, here are a dozen plastic bottles, you can have mine too, I was the antithesis of everything that I had just heard in the gospel and missed that opportunity after I walked out of church saying, I'm really going to live this gospel today, duh. So I was not a good apostle. I was just the opposite. But how easy it is to go down that slippery slope every time, even though we know better.
John, I have to tell you, actually, you were being a very good apostle. It sounds like you were Saint Peter, right? I mean, Lord, I will not deny you. I'll go to death with you. And look what happens. I think
exactly.
I only
did the bottles twice, not three times.
Right. Right. But you know, that's what happens. And honestly, if we're being totally open here, I had a similar experience earlier last week, and I got angry at somebody, and I should have kept my cool. And well, it was plenty of food for a good confession the next
yeah.
day. But you know, it's an ongoing struggle, and I think that ultimately, I think what you said, you really touched on something there. I think there are times when all we need to do is plant some seeds by being nice to someone. You know, that's the start. You mentioned just telling the person, all right, why don't you just go ahead? I have a hard time doing that. But sometimes that's the beginning of it. And I think the Holy Spirit, you and I talk about the Spirit a lot. I think the Spirit can guide us to sometimes have that prudence to, all right, back off. Don't go too, you know, don't say too much. But I think it starts by being nice to someone. And, you know, and that opens the door because who's going to listen to us talk about the faith or talk about Jesus when we're nasty? And I have that tendency when I'm backed up against the wall. I'm a passionate person, John. I can get a little emotional.
Sure.
And I've caused a lot of damage that way. So
sure.
I think it depends, right? I mean, I think it depends on following the lead of the Spirit. But, and you know, here's the other thing. I had a priest tell me this once. Sometimes, in order to be a good apostle and to share the good news, you have to risk looking foolish. Like, what if this person laughs at me if I offer to pray for them? Or, you know, something like that. And I've been through that, and I've yet to have a person, and I do that now. I force myself to say, oh, I'll say a prayer for you. I've yet to have a person say, don't bother. I don't want that.
Right.
I almost always say thank you, but there's always that in the back of your mind. They're going to think I'm a nut, or they're going to get mad at me. But I think sometimes
yeah.
for me it's pride, right? I don't want to look foolish.
That's it. That's what it boils down to as we have this conversation about how you and I can be apostles like the first apostle, St. Mary Magdalene, whose feast day was last Friday. Our number here with Gary Zimek is 888-914-9149. And maybe you found yourself in this same situation where you have the opportunity to share your faith. Did you say something? Did you not say something? What was the reaction? How were you the apostle of today? What happened to you when you shared your faith with someone else? Our number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You hit the root cause of a lot of this, and that is the sin of pride. And we don't realize until we have conversations like this, thanks be to God for Relevant Radio, where you really do see how deep that sin of pride can be and how it really kind of, it's like water. Water will find its
yeah.
way into things that you just say, how did that get there? And
yeah.
that's exactly how pride is with our soul.
Yeah. And John, I like to be right. I don't want somebody to tell me I'm wrong. And if they say something to me, I'm going to show them. And I'm so bad. And you know, I'm so bad. It's funny. You and I are being really open here, and I think it's good that we're admitting we struggle with this. I'm so bad that I'll replay conversations in my mind, and I'll say, I should have said this. I
right.
wish I said it. You know.
Yeah.
And I confess that over the weekend. I said, Father, I'm sorry. I replay these conversations, but I think that frequent confession helps because we get the grace to maybe hold back and to help us forget some of those things and to try to imitate Christ. I mean, you know, look at what happened to him when he was on trial. He
sure.
defended him. He said a few things in his defense, but for the most part, he allowed it to happen because he knew that it was according to the Father's plan. So I think it comes down to, do I really need to win this argument? Or do I really care about the other person? Just a quick thing, John, you know, our Protestant brothers and sisters are really good sometimes at evangelizing. Maybe they go overboard sometimes, but in their mind, they believe that somebody who has not accepted Christ is going to hell and they want to help that person. And I think, like, sometimes I think we have to have that same mindset. Do I care enough about people who don't know Jesus that I'm willing to hold my tongue and maybe bring them gradually into a relationship with him? You know, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm not willing to do what Jesus did and deal with some really annoying, obnoxious people to share the good news. And the Lord's working on me. He's working on me big time, and I'm realizing that's a problem in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, and thanks be to God for that sacrament of reconciliation. Oh. To kind of get us back on the straight and narrow as we talk with Gary Zimek here on the Drew Mariani Show about being the apostle of today, about sharing your faith in those times when you do get derailed. What's happened to you when you've said, you know what, I'm Catholic and here's what I stand for? Norma is joining our conversation in Miami, listening to Relevant Radio 1080. Hi, Norma. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Hi, good afternoon. I just turned on the radio and I heard that. And I'm the epitome of putting my foot in my mouth very, very often. And somebody sent me this little quote this morning that says, and I thought that it's so on point because it says, silence and prudence walk slow, but they always arrive. And I think that I'm going to make that my motto of this week. To see if I can stay silent when I feel that somebody's offending me, because I tend to react very quickly and then I regret it.
Right, right. And, you know, and Norma, you bring up another important point, and Gary, I'd like you to talk to this, and that is Norma's focusing on that one point. And how many times, and this is also rooted in the sin of pride, do we come up with this laundry list of things that, okay, God, I'm going to take care of all of this for you, when it's really only one thing that we got to take care of and really should focus on. And I think, you know, Norma's nailed it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's something that the Holy Spirit's really working on me to try to learn. And one thing I want to follow up on Norma's point there, John, there comes a time where it's okay if the situation is right, to defend yourself if it's necessary, or to remove yourself. And I'm sure you'd agree with that. We don't need to take needless abuse. We can walk away. And I think sometimes that's the answer, to just to distance ourselves from the situation, pray for the person. But, you know, as a matter of fact, I had somebody this week I was dealing with that problem I'm telling you about. Somebody called me, began to harass me about something. And when I began to speak up and defend myself, they hung up on me. So, I mean, that, right? So, but then I was called by the Lord to just forgive that person and let it go. I wanted to call back. I wanted to email. And my wife said, just let it go. It's not that important. And, you know, that's sometimes, I think the Spirit has to guide us to let us know when we should say something or when we should just open our mouth. But what Norma said, too, that deliberate reaction, maybe think twice before sending that email.
Right.
Maybe, right? And that's often enough time to let the Spirit work and to let us calm down.
And you know what, Gary, the next time they call, extend that car warranty. Don't hang up on them.
Yeah.
How many times do you get those calls, right? Or you're nasty to them. Yeah. That falls under this umbrella as well. Yeah. Linda, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. Linda's in New Mexico. Those times when we're called to be apostles and we may not share our faith the way we should. Hi, Linda. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. It was a time many years ago I lived in Manhattan, and I needed to go to the hospital for some medical tests. And I got a cab, and it was very, very hot, and all the windows in the car were open. I asked the cabbie to please, you know, close the windows, put the air conditioning on. And he just got, for whatever reason, very belligerent, started yelling at me, oh, you want hot? I'm going to put the heat on. I'm going to make it hotter. And on and on and on, and he even stopped when we stopped at a light. He started videotaping me with his camera. So I pushed him, pushed his hand away, and we finally got to the hospital. And I was so, I didn't know what to say, but Holy Spirit must have come over me because I looked at him. I said, "Well, look, I think you're really having a very bad day, and I'm going to pray for you."
Nice.
Well, he completely changed his demeanor.
Wow.
And he looked at me, he says, you're going to pray for me? I said, yes, I'm going to pray for you. And we were supposed to go to court, and he never showed up, so I'm hoping that maybe he realized you know, that the Holy Spirit was working in him too.
Amen. Amen, Linda. Good. And that's a prayer that we say. As a matter of fact, we were just saying this before we went on the air, is the prayer to the Holy Spirit to guide us. And he has with you, Linda, in your situation and in this conversation with Gary Zimmick. Gary, I wish we had more time, but it's always our enemy here on the radio. Gary is a Catholic evangelist and author, and I'm hopeful giving you some solutions on the next time those situations arise in your life, how to really be the apostle of today and share the good news. Again, Gary's website is followingthetruth.com, followingthetruth.com, and you can go up there. And of course, from Ave Maria Press, get Gary's latest book, Let Go of Anger and Stress, How Appropriate with the Conversation That We Have Had. Gary, as always, thank you.
My pleasure, John. Thank you. God bless you.
Coming up next, the Supreme Court has overturned Roe versus Wade. You know that the abortion still remains legal in many states, and there's a lot of spin on there about Roe versus Wade, how to handle that. And again, stand up and be the apostle of today. We'll give you those solutions coming up here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
John Harper for Drew this afternoon. And of course, you know that the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. That's been the focus of so many of our conversations here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. But doesn't mean abortion is illegal in the United States. Abortion remains legal in many states. And for you and me as pro-life people, that means our work is continuing. And you have heard the issues of life debated in states that remain pro-choice, that are havens for abortion now, places like New York and Illinois, and also those states that firmly stand for life. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control's most recent abortion surveillance report, and this is for the year 2019, early medical abortions made up 42.3% of abortions that year. Now, you've also heard the debate about abortion in cases of rape or incest, and also in cases of difficult pregnancies where one or more lives may be at stake. Let's go inside that debate right now. Dr. Christine Francis returns here to the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. She is a board-certified OBGYN. She joins us from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Francis is a board member and the CEO-elect of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She's also an associate scholar with the Charlotte Lozier Institute and a board member of Indiana Right for Life and a physician member of the Abortion Pill Reversal Network. Dr. Christina, it's good to have you back on.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me back.
How do we start? And now, I mean, you can just, you know, the spin there has been on both sides of the choice in life issues since the Supreme Court ruling just a couple of weeks ago. So when we get into these nuances about when an abortion may be acceptable, when we get into that, and really is the conversation becomes a vortex when it goes to those areas, what do we say as Catholics?
Sure. Well, you know, I think that, first of all, we need to point out that, as you and I both know, that the pro-abortion side is using these very difficult circumstances to justify what their true agenda is, which is abortion on demand for any reason through all 9 months of birth. And so they're using this as a smokescreen. And really, you know, who it's harming is women, because women are being made to be fearful that they are not going to be able to receive life-saving care when they need it. You know, as a pro-life physician who's practiced for 14 years, who has never needed to intentionally end the life of my fetal patient, of that preborn child in order to save a woman's life, I can say that no abortion restriction that is being debated currently or is on the books would ever prevent a woman's life from being saved when needed. You know, there are circumstances like that. And as pro-life physicians, those are difficult circumstances, certainly, because we know that our interventions may unintentionally lead to the death of that preborn child. But that's where that intent piece is very, very important. And I think a lot of people on the other side of this issue are minimizing that and saying that we're playing, you know, word games and things like this. But But intent, as a physician especially, intent is everything in all of the decisions that I make. You know, if I make a decision on what to recommend to a patient because my intent is what's most expedient for me, that's wrong. If I make a recommendation to my patient because my intent is to help preserve her health and her life, then that's justified. That's my job as a physician. So intent is everything behind what we do as physicians. And so, you know, when we intervene in the case of, say, an ectopic pregnancy or, you know, maybe a more difficult circumstance, maybe a mom has, her water has broken, you know, at 18 weeks, so just pre-viable, and then she develops signs of infection, that puts her at risk for sepsis. That's a situation where we have to intervene to separate mom and baby. But that can be done in a way that does not intend the death of her child and that respects the dignity of that child's life. And, you know, that's something that I do, that so many of my colleagues who don't perform abortions, which we know the vast majority of OBs don't, that's what we do as part of our everyday practice. And what's really been upsetting to me is this narrative that somehow physicians are stupid or something. You know, I mean, somehow right. that we're not going to understand or know when it is that we need to intervene to save our patients' lives. And that's, I really honestly don't believe that the people who are saying this actually believe it, because they have to be doing this as part of their everyday practice.
Dr. Christina, speaking to your point of ectopic pregnancies, even Planned Parenthood acknowledges that managing an ectopic pregnancy is not an abortion.
Right, right. And you know, it's which, on a side note, I've heard that they've scrubbed that from their website, interestingly, but I know enough people that grab screenshots of it to be able to say that, yes, they have that on their website, that treating an ectopic pregnancy is not an abortion. First of all, because our intent in treating that ectopic pregnancy is to save the life of the mother, not to end the life of her child. But also, we use very different procedures than to treat an ectopic pregnancy than we do to than people do to perform abortions. But also, I think it's very interesting that this whole talk of ectopic pregnancy and miscarriage treatment and all that never even came up for the other side until all of a sudden they had to defend and justify their position. And they know that they can't, because they know that there's no defense for intending the death of innocent human lives, for intending the harm of the women who are going through abortions. And so they have to hide behind these tough cases, which don't even justify abortions because they're not abortions.
Dr. Christina Francis is our guest here on The Drew Mariani Show, and we are separating fact from fiction in a post-Roe versus Wade world. Can you explain how these issues of abortion and difficult pregnancies are taught in most medical schools and what the position of the American Medical Association is?
Yeah, so, you know, I can speak from my own training. I trained at a Catholic hospital where, of course, we did not do elective abortions. But what we were taught was, you know, there are times when a woman's life may be in danger. In that situation, we are intervening to save who we can save. You know, if that happens after the point where baby can survive outside of mom, there's no question. There's no talk of doing an abortion. You just do a premature delivery and you take care of mom and you take care of baby. But again, even in those pre-viability situations, those were never referred to as abortions, either at my hospital where I trained or at any hospital that I've worked at since. You know, those are indicated preterm deliveries where, again, you do what actually most families want, which is you deliver them an intact child that they can hold and grieve if that child can't survive, and you provide appropriate care for both of them. So this is well understood within the medical community and has been for quite some time, and is part of every OBGYN residency training program, even if they're not doing abortions. So this again, false narrative that if we take away abortion from a state, that the residents in that state, somehow their medical training is going to suffer, is completely false. We learn everything that we need to learn in order to give excellent health care to our patients in residency, regardless of whether or not we're doing elective abortion. And, you know, unfortunately, what we've seen, especially in the last couple of years, and especially since the Dobbs decision came out, is many of the mainstream medical organizations, including the AMA, including ACOG, the American College of OBGYNs, who claims to represent all OBs in the country, have doubled down on their radical pro-abortion agenda that really sets aside good medical practice, and it sets aside the bulk of the medical literature that discusses the harms of abortion for women in favor of an all-out pro-abortion political narrative. And, you know, they really, we're seeing a lot of physicians coming to us saying, these groups do not represent me. can I join you even if I'm not an OBGYN, because these groups no longer represent me. And so their positions are radically out of step with the vast majority of their members and the vast majority of practicing physicians in the U.S.
Thanks be to God for that. Our conversation with Dr. Christina Francis today here on the Drew Mariani Show. And we're talking about how doctors can still save pregnant women's lives without abortion. You can join our conversation. Perhaps you have questions. Our number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, with Dr. Christina Francis here on the Drew Mariani Show. What's interesting in this post-Dobbs decision conversation is that even in states that are the most pro, laws that are in the most pro-life states and other states do recognize the difference between abortion and treating problem pregnancies, but you don't hear that part of the story.
No, I know. And again, I think it's because the pro-abortion side knows that there is no justification and no defense for their actual position, which is abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy and for any reason. And so they have to create this confusion, which never needed to exist. We as physicians have not been able, our ability to intervene to save a woman's life was not because Roe v. Wade was the law of the land. Physicians prior to Roe, even in states that restricted abortion, had the ability to intervene to save the life of a woman when needed, and to provide care for both her and her child if that was at all possible. And so that's what we're going back to. And, you know, in many of these states that had, conditional laws that went into effect as soon as Roe was overturned, that's what we went back to. And so, you know, these claims that physicians are just sitting and watching patients who have ectopic pregnancies as they bleed into their abdomen, or sitting and watching a woman bleeding from a miscarriage where her baby has already passed.
Yeah.
Either that is the fault of the hospital system or their lawyer of not correctly interpreting the law, or the physician has not educated themselves well enough. It's not the fault of the law. And so, you know, our job as physicians is, yes, to abide by the laws of the state that we practice in. And if you don't like the laws of the state that you practice in, then, you know, in this changing landscape, you know, I do envision that physicians that don't want to perform abortions will sort of gravitate towards states that have restricted abortion, and physicians who want to perform abortions, you know, conversely, will gravitate towards states like California and New York that allow it. But this false narrative that's out there that physicians have their hands tied and are not able to intervene to actively save a patient who either is very sick right in front of them, or who they could foresee is going to become very sick. Because that's the other narrative that I keep hearing is, well, how sick does a woman have to be? Do I have to wait till she goes into the ICU? No, that's why we have specialized training. That's what we trained all those years for, is to be able to identify signs in our patient that they are beginning to get sick before they get so sick that it's too late to intervene. That's what we do every single day. And so, again, I just cannot believe that there are physicians out there who supposedly can't figure this out. And if that's the case, then I don't know that they have any business practicing medicine. Honestly, I mean, I'm not trying to be glib. It's just knowing what I do every day, based on my training, I am perfectly capable of making those diagnoses before a woman gets very, very sick. And so it just is really unbelievable to me that there would be any competent, well-trained physician that wouldn't be able to figure that out.
Is it surprising to you, Dr. Christina, that there's even some confusion over miscarriage?
Yes, because I don't believe that the confusion is genuine on the part of physicians. I think that women are very confused, and I don't blame them, because there is a lot of misinformation that's being spread. I don't think that there is genuine confusion by physicians, because a miscarriage situation we know is inherently completely different than an abortion situation. That is a situation where either that preborn child has already passed or their passing is inevitable. You know, the woman is right. actively delivering that baby. You know,
yeah.
So these are things. And all someone really has to do is think about, okay, how does a physician make that determination in a situation where the woman desperately wants that baby? So when we're not talking about a situation where that was an unplanned pregnancy or maybe the woman doesn't want that baby, but in a situation where that woman, that family desperately wants this baby, as physicians, we would hold off on doing any kind of intervention unless we knew we absolutely had no other choice. It is the same exact decision process that you go through in a
right.
state where they might restrict elective abortion, but allow, early separations to save the life of the mother.
These issues of life, of course, very close to us as Catholics, and a personal story, Dr. Christina. I was my mom had a very difficult pregnancy. It took 4 years to conceive after mom and dad were married. And then it was a very, very difficult pregnancy. We were both in the hospital for 3 weeks and both given the last rites of the church when I was born and she delivered. Fast forward 11 years later, my mom is pregnant, but has a miscarriage in the sixth month. So my sister Stephanie would have been 11 years younger than I am today. So issues of life and these issues were always front and center in our household. And we're going to continue this conversation about how doctors can still save pregnant women's lives without abortion. There's a lot of confusion there in light of the Dobbs decision. You can join our conversation with Dr. Christina Francis. Our number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, as we continue here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
John Harper for Drew this afternoon. We'll pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet coming up at the top of the hour here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. But right now we are talking about what you and I have been bombarded with since the Dobbs decision, the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade. And those are some of the heavy-handed pro-abortion messages that you almost seem to not be able to escape. But our guest today on the Drew Mariani Show is Dr. Christina Francis, who's saying, wait a minute. Doctors can still save pregnant women's lives without abortion. Dr. Francis is an OBGYN, and she is also an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and the CEO-elect of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And you can join our conversation here at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Jill's first up in Chicago this afternoon. Jill, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. You're on with Dr. Christina. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My question is, let's say a woman comes to you, doctor, and to your office, and she has been raped and she does conceive. What would you then tell her? What is the pro-abortion, or excuse me, the pro-life stance to say for people that have had rape or incest, and have gotten pregnant?
Yeah, no, it's a great question because it's definitely something that we as a pro-life movement have to grapple with. But also as a physician, I have had to deal with patients of mine as well. And I think first and foremost, I think it's important for people to understand that even as a physician who opposes abortion, my heart goes out to women and, young girls who have experienced the trauma of rape. That is a trauma that no woman, no person should ever have to endure. It is really, one of the ultimate violations, I think, that a woman especially can have of just her bodily integrity and just the mental trauma that goes along with it is overwhelming. But I think it's also important to remember that abortion is not a treatment for trauma. And in fact, it is its own trauma. And so what we see in conversations with patients is that abortion doesn't heal them of the trauma of their rape. In fact, like I said, it adds another layer of trauma on top of it. And, you know, one of the dangers, I think, of assuming that abortion is the right thing, which it's understandable to me to see how people would think that. I mean, that is definitely a position that I understand where people are coming from. But one of the dangers of that, I think, is that it's oftentimes assumed that once a woman then has her abortion, that then her trauma is mostly resolved, because now, you know, that pregnancy, that potential reminder of what happened to her, that child is now gone. And so that's not a treatment for her trauma. We've just added on top of it. And the few studies that have been done on this, there's not a lot of them out there, but the few studies that have been done actually show that women who chose to carry their pregnancies to term, and whether they parented that child or placed that child for adoption, actually had better mental health outcomes than those who chose abortion. And, you know, we know abortion in general carries a much higher mental health risk than carrying a pregnancy to term. Just, you know, again, not referencing just the rape situation, but in general, abortion has a 7 times higher suicide rate than carrying a pregnancy to term. And so, you know, what I believe women in that situation need is support, and they need proven treatment to help heal their trauma, and abortion is not one of them. So we do need to give them support through that pregnancy and beyond, and ensure that the trauma that they've been through is adequately addressed and that they can go through healing for that.
Jill, thanks for the question. Our number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. What do we need to do, Dr. Christina, to raise the profile of the conversation about adoption?
Yeah, well, you know, that is one option that we can offer women that is life-affirming not only for their child, but also spares them from the harms of abortion. So, you know, I think that this issue of women facing crisis pregnancies is a very complex one. Certainly for some women, they are going to find themselves in a position where they are not ready to parent. And in that situation, adoption is a great option. I have a sister who's adopted. I have pseudo nieces and nephews. My best friend's children, two of them are adopted. So, you know, I've seen the love that goes into adopting a child so that child can have a family and have a chance at life when otherwise they may not have had that. But, you know, I also think providing support for women to be able to make the choice in giving their child life, whether they parent or place that child for adoption, the choice that is best for them and best for their child. You know, certainly I think, you know, policymakers could remove some barriers that are there. Adopting a child is oftentimes very difficult. And there are a lot of families out there that would love to be able to give a child a home if that child's parents, if that child's mother can't provide that for them. You know, but I also really think providing women with the supports that they need to be able to parent their children, if that's what they desire to do. So many women choose abortion simply because they don't feel like they have the support or the resources they need to be able to parent their child. And I can't imagine anything more heartbreaking than that, for a woman to feel like she has to make the choice to end the life or have someone else end the life of her child simply because she just needs support or she needs a little help to get out of the circumstances that she's in. And this is something that I think that we as a country, that we as a society really have a chance now that the Band-Aid of abortion is not going to be available in certain states. Now there should be real motivation for people on both sides of this issue to sit down together at the table and come up with real solutions. We've had 49 years of unrestricted access to abortion, essentially, and it has done nothing to lift women out of poverty. It has done nothing to improve our maternal mortality rates, especially in minority communities. It's done nothing to decrease our preterm birth rates. In fact, those have all gotten worse. So now it's time to stop looking at abortion as a solution, realize that it is not a solution, and sit down at the table together and come up with real solutions that are going to permanently lift women and their families out of poverty, that are going to put them in better situations, and that are going to give these children a chance at life.
When you and I last had this conversation, when I was filling in for Drew, this was before the Roe versus Wade decision from the Supreme Court, and we mentioned to each other that this is going to be an issue that obviously is back in the states. It is. but really is in our own kitchens, in our own families. That's mm-hmm. where it begins in terms of changing hearts and changing minds. We've got about 90 seconds remaining. When the children are of age, what's the conversation that mom and dad should have about the issues of life? Of course, their entire lives should be witnesses to that. But still, these are important issues that really need to be discussed in the home because of the overwhelming noise that comes from the pro-abortion crowd that's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're absolutely right that education on this, you know, for the long term, really does need to start with children when they're young. They need to understand that, you know, regardless of someone's position on, you know, contraception and or abstinence or, you know, anything like that, they need to understand that there is a very real consequence tied to having sex. And, you know, before you make that decision, of course, I think that should be saved for, you know, the confines of marriage. But regardless of when someone is going to make that choice, they need to understand that there's a very real biological consequence of that decision. And even if someone thinks that they're taking precautions to avoid that, it's a biological reality that might result. And what does that mean? That means that another human being has come into existence. And what responsibilities do we have, you know, for people who are parents, what responsibilities do they have to their children? Well, they have a responsibility to care for them, even when that means that might impede on maybe plans that they had for their life or, you know, anything like that. As parents, you have a responsibility to your children and helping instill that sense of responsibility and also the joy that comes.
And I
got to
jump in, Dr. Christina, because we're out of time. But again, you have given us great solutions here in this discussion that we'll continue to have. Dr. Christina Francis here, and we're hopeful we've given you solutions. John Harper in for Drew this afternoon. The Divine Mercy Chaplet next on Relevant Radio.